Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 22 of Here We Go Again, Israeli Politics. Bennett canceled a trip to Umm al-Fahim for varying reasonings. Should the army and Shabak be used on the Israeli Arab population? The ministers of merits meet with Abu Mazen, seemingly against the wishes of the prime minister, and Abu Mazen makes an interesting request that's denied. The new green permit was an absolute failure, and Supreme Court Justice nominee list is revealed. This is Here We Go Again. And for our first topic,
we're going to be discussing the government's relationship with the Arabs, civilians of Israel. Meaning, there's been quite a few different scenarios that have come up in the past few weeks, specifically with the heads of the government, with the Arab civilians. And let's go through them. Before we go into specific cases that happened, it's important to understand something. A very big issue in the Arab communities in Israel is a major crime wave. There's a lot of gangs and tons of violence. Murders happen all the time, and it's a very dangerous place to live for Arabs. As in, for Arab on Arab violence is incredibly common. They also have hundreds, if not thousands, of illegal weapons, and they use them on a consistent basis, and the police have absolutely no control on that. And we'll get into detail on that a little bit later. The first interesting scenario that happened was Prime Minister Bennett was supposed to go to Umm al-Fahim, which is an Arab town, for a visit there to see the vaccination site and to give his support for vaccines in the area. But he had canceled his trip, and there were two opposing stories as to why he canceled his trip. First, the Arab party in the government, Ram, came out with an official announcement prior to the announcement of the Prime Minister, stating that it was canceled out of respect for the Shahidim that died in October of 2000. Now, for those who are not aware of what the word Shahidim mean, it is a holy word. It is a name for Arabs, for holy people who died in the fight against Jews. Obviously, he's discussing terrorists that died during the Intifada whilst attacking Jews. Now, this is obviously a super bad political picture for Bennett, if this was true. On the other side, there is the Prime Minister's announcement from his side that it was just canceled because there was a expectations of riots and out of security measures for the Prime Minister. It was canceled. This is from Matan Sidi, the Speaker of the Prime Minister. Now, out of the two scenarios, it is considerably more likely that the Prime Minister scenario is what actually happened from his point of view, as in there was probably a very big security threat for him going to Umm al-Fahim in the first place. If you're going during a heated time, it was canceled. That being said, the fact that a member of the government, got up and said it was canceled out of respect for terrorists that killed Jews is a horrible thing to say. And no government should have ever allowed that. And there should have been a forced apology to have come out of Ram for ever having put out that message. Irrelevant to the fact that we'll discuss that canceling this visit in the first place was just bad. Bad precedent and bad politically.
So I think that some part of me thinks that the real reason it was canceled is worse than the fake reason. You know, for the Prime Minister to decide that there is a location that he cannot enter. And again, we're not talking about a last-minute location that suddenly heated up and suddenly had a security issue that was not planned. You're talking about something that was planned in advance. We're aware of the security measures in advance. This is a place within Israeli sovereignty, complete Israeli sovereignty. And for the Prime Minister not to be able to go to this area to cancel a trip because of security issues, again, not specific threats, not a specific issue just popped up, but general fear of rioting, because a year ago we had illegal riots, endangerment of the Arab population. That is something that is, to me, it's just an embarrassment. I'm not saying it was a wrong decision. I'm not saying they shouldn't have decided to cancel it. I'm saying that it doesn't just look bad, it is bad. It shows a weakness of our ability to create safety for the people that live there and safety for our government officials anywhere that is in Israeli sovereignty.
That being said, just for a clear understanding, we're not talking about going to Gaza, for example, or going down to the Sinai border. We're talking about Umm al-Fahim is an Arab city, Israeli Arab city, that's right next to Haifa and has a population of 57,000 people as of 2019. This is not a small city, and him not going there for fear for his life is abysmal. And it's just a disgrace. Again, but I would like to mention...
Well, it was less fear for his life. They are able to secure him. It was... Oh, no. This is the main issue. It's not just... It wasn't a cancellation of the fear for the Prime Minister's life. It was a cancellation not to heat up the area. That's the part that bothers me. It's legitimate to cancel a event anywhere. If you're going to have an event in the middle of Tel Aviv and suddenly you have a certain threat that you understand that you're not able to thing and therefore you need to cancel the Prime Minister's trip, obviously find good excuses, but that's the Secret Service's job, is to understand that there's a threat that they're not able to protect him. It's the decision, it's a political decision that they don't want to heat up the area. They're scared of the Israeli Arab population deciding to start rioting, and they don't want to have the issues we had last time, and therefore they're canceling the trip. That's the embarrassing part to me.
I agree. However, I don't agree with you that the actual reasoning is worse than the one given by the Arab party, Ra'am. Them saying it is for commemoration out of respect for terrorists about an Israeli prime minister is horrible. And it might even be grounds for breaking up this government. As much as people might like this government or say you need to compromise to keep it alive, these are things you cannot compromise. Even if the Arab party themselves don't believe it, they do not get to make these type of statements publicly and get away with it. This was an official announcement from them. This wasn't something that was put out by through the back door by a tweet. This was an official announcement that came out from them. And it's just bad. Now, back to the security issue. This leads to another topic that's been a very big... made a lot of headlines on the news recently. The security cabinet has approved the army and the Shabakh, which is the security forces, the Secret Service of Israel, to help in curtailing the violence and the crime in the Arab population. Now, this sets terrible precedent, and I'm actually against this, because the army does not deal with civilian law enforcement. It is never good anywhere in the world when the army deals with civilian law enforcement. The army is for defense of the country. When you're using it on your own citizens, it is a bad idea. Whether or not your citizens are Arab or Jewish, it's just bad. And I don't like it. I don't like when it happens to the right, and I don't like when it happened on the left with pushing out of Gush Katif. The army dealing with it almost tore the country apart. And I don't think the army should be treating Arabs as the second-class citizen. I might be called a leftist for this, but no. They're citizens. And the answer to this problem is fix the police. The police are a failure consistently. In everywhere in the country, they're just bad at their job. We saw this in the Arab cities during Chomat Magen, and we see this in general. They're just not good at their jobs. And putting in the army is not a solution. The solution long term is fix the police. You cannot use the army on civilians.
Okay, and what about the Shabakh, the Secret Service? Their job is to deal with civilians of the country.
Yes, now the Shabakh is a different issue. The Shabakh technically break all privacy laws. They're not beholden to privacy laws, which is a serious issue unto themselves, but even they are extreme measures being used. And I'm okay with extreme measures being used. I'm not okay with the army. My main issue is the army. It's military forces being used on civilians.
Okay, so the issue here is, what you're saying is correct, and no, you should not have the army get involved. Although, it's almost like a really interesting political situation to see, because when we're bringing in people to stop the Arab populations, people think it's against the Arab. It's the Arabs are the ones that are begging for it. The whole complaint the Arab populations have is that you're not securing us. Okay, when there are Arabs shooting Arabs, that's the main issue. The people who are mainly getting hurt are the Arab citizens themselves. They're the ones that are terrified. They're the ones that this is endangering every day, and their kids are getting shot in wars between people that are being endangered there. So it's almost hypocritical. The Arab parties are the ones that are trying to protect, are supposedly trying to protect it, but then when we come and say, okay, the way to do it, I'm sorry, and I don't know to say this is a purely police, again, I'm being careful with my words, I'm not saying the solution is the army, but also it's a little naive to expect the Israeli police in the state that it's in right now to be able to deal with the situation. It can't deal with it. It doesn't have the manpower, it doesn't have the technology, it's not able to do it. And then therefore, we're saying, other on, the Arab populations are the ones that should be supporting and fighting for it and say, bring in the Shabakh. come in, take all the guns away, because they are killing mainly, they're not killing Jews. They're killing other Arabs. It's for them.
Just to clarify, Ahmad Tibi, who is the head of the joint Arab party, the Arab party is not part of this government, who are considerably worse and more fond of terrorists. He is one of the people who consistently calls for policing the Arab population, but he went very much against when the announcement that the army and the Shabak would be going into the army population to perform policing.
Because again, we have to notice it's all a matter of politics. It's all a matter of actual politics and what it looks like. He fights for the fact that we go in and give more security there to protect the Arab citizens. But the political, the way it looks publicly of saying we're going to send the Secret Service, the Shabak, in to the Arab populations. Oh no, I need to defend the Arabs from the Shabak. It's literally a game that they're playing.
That being said, it does have bad connotations and bad memories for the Arab population. And I saw this online, and I have to say I agree with it. Irrelevant to the fact that military should not be dealing with the Arab population. For 18 years, since the founding of this country, or 17 years, during the founding of this country, they were under military lives. They lived in the military occupation. Israeli citizens. They were given full citizenship. But they had a curfew, they had to be home, and there was even a massacre that happened by mistake because of that. And I understand the argument from the Arab populace that the army shouldn't be used for it. And I agree that it has to be solved. But again, I have to go back and say it has to be solved by fixing the police. Because whilst the Arab population is a bad problem, they are not the source of the issue. They're just another symptom of a much deeper rooted sickness in our country with the policing in system. And our final point on the government's relations with the Arabs, we get to the left wing of the government. The ministers of Meretz, which is the socialist party, who is headed by Nitzan Horowitz, who is the minister of health, met with Abu Mazen. Just a reminder, Abu Mazen is the head of the Palestinian Authority, a terrorist in his own right, and a supporter of terrorists who pays terrorists to attack Israel. He met with Abu Mazen this week, seemingly against the wishes of the prime minister. He left the Corona cabinet early to do this. This is just another in a stream of politicians that are running to Ramallah to meet with Abu Mazen, giving him legitimacy that was torn down during the Netanyahu administration, and seemingly pushing forward, even though Yamina keeps on claiming that there's no peace plan, there's no peace talks. They seem to be pushing forward with a plan, or at least legitimizing the PA once again.
I think that it comes down again to their move. I'm not saying I agree with it, but in the end, the idea is Abu Mazen's dying. Fact, he's a very old man. He is not healthy. He's dying. And this move, whether or not, I'm not saying this is their plan, but I'm saying that, look, every time they meet with them, they weaken Hamas. And they're trying to push forward an agenda where we're showing that we are supportive. Again, I don't think there's even a need. I don't care enough. Like, we are strong enough. This is your problem. I have no need to knock on the door of the homeless man that's living outside the house that's trying to beg for, you know, the thing. Come and beg. I don't need to go to you. I'm the one with the mansion, and I'm the one with the successful, strong country. But the idea of saying that Abu Mazen, making him stronger, weakens Hamas, has some legitimacy to it and has some concept behind it.
If that is the goal, let's look at what they said, their announcement, the ministers of merits. The announcement from the ministers of merits was, we will renew the talks and the participation, and we will block any moves that will hurt the two-state solution. And the head of Meretz, the minister Nitzan Horowitz, continued. He said, Meretz has a mission in this government to maintain the two-state solution alive. We will not let it disappear, and we will not let anyone hurt it, because there is no other solution. We believe that we cannot do any one-sided steps that might hurt the implementation of a two-state solution. No new settlements, no unlawful settlements, and no violence that will cause a fire east on both sides. Now, this is bad. Okay, there's a lot more that they said that we'll talk about in a second. But just this, the two-state solution was pushed off the table. It was. it was de facto being gotten rid of during the Netanyahu administration. Even if it was never said out openly, and even if Netanyahu gave lip service on occasion to the two-state solution, de facto on the ground, it wasn't practical. It hasn't been practical for a long time, not in any way that's feasible in the near future. And then saying openly as part of this government, no new settlements, we're not going to support the settlements, we're hurting the settlements, we're going to freeze them, we're not going to let them grow, is bad. Is a really bad thing
to say. What do you expect them to do? This is what they believe in. This is what their base believes in.
Shut up.
No, why?
No, that's honestly what
why
I expect
them to do. Why would they do that? Why? If I was Nitzan Horowitz, the first thing I would do is go meet with Abu Mazen. That's what his voters want. He's showing power.
Because you are risking this government. Because as much as he hates it, and we'll get to why they need this government, because everyone currently needs this government, and they are risking the stability of this government with this move. Because eventually, either the right or the left are going to push each other too far, and this government breaks.
It shatters into pieces. Very clear. I'm not saying that his move is politically smart. I'm saying that I understand where he's coming from. I don't necessarily agree with him. I don't think anyone should be with Abu Mazen. But his party believes in that, and the people behind him do believe in that. And I think it was actually interesting to see, because after they met Meretz, the ultra-left met with Abu Mazen, then the people of the Avodah, the socialist party, ran to meet with him, and the head of the party said no. There was a whole back and forth because the head of the party said that is not our agenda, and it's not the Avodah's agenda to meet with him. It was members within the party that are more extreme to meet with him. And then the head of the party came and said, we're not funding it. If you're going to meet with him, it is not an official meeting of the party. And I think that was the important thing to pay attention to. That they understood this is not our agenda and we don't want this.
That being said, it did cause a big uproar in the government, okay? Because Abu Mazen had one request in this meeting. Aside from, he stated that, I would like all ministers of the government to come meet with me, and we don't need to come to agreement, we just need to talk. But he made, which is bad onto its own, right? Because he seems to be like a kingmaker who gets a seat that he gets, that everyone comes to meet with him. But he made one more request. He requested that Minister Ayelet Shaked, who is the Minister of the Interior, number two in the Yamina party, come meet with him. Now, she is a right-wing member, and he wanted to meet with her specifically. And her response was great. Her response was a response I expect from any right-wing leader. And any leader in the state of Israel, really. I will not meet with someone who denies the Holocaust and who supports and funds terrorism. That was her response, and she called him a murderer. And yes, he deserves that. And yes, she should not be meeting with him. But once again, it is fracturing this government. Meretz threatened the stability and the structure of this government by going to meet with him. So did Gantz in his own right when he did that. And
so I think that it's actually super interesting, and this is what I think is a beautiful part to see if you look at the positive side. Ayelet Shaked, it's almost a double-sided game here. Abu Mazen invites her and she calls him a murderer. And Ayelet Shaked also came back. It's incredible to see the video footage and the articles from it. Came back from a trip to Dubai and was accepted there like a queen. They said it is unbelievable. She was literally accepted there. They say the acceptance she had when she landed in the plane was like the leaders of the largest countries in the world. And it was unbelievable to show how much these countries want to be close to Israel and want the support of Israel.
Especially when she was at this in Abu Dhabi, she stated in an interview multiple times that there will be no Palestinian state. And no one had any issue with this. She didn't cause an international incident. On the contrary, once she landed in Israel, she got a call from the Israeli, from their ambassador, from the UAE ambassador, stating, you did your country proud and you strengthened our relationship immensely. And that happening whilst her being saying that is once again proof whilst this should not be happening during this government, because they should not be attempting to break apart this government, which they sorely need.
No, I think it shows that it's child play. That's what I'm saying. I think that when it comes to the government, I don't like, it's just child play. They're small characters meeting with an irrelevant person in the Arab community anymore that has no power, that it's dying. Let them meet with him. It's there. It's like, it's sad. The real things are happening around the world. That's what matters to us. What's happening with the moderate Arab countries and the power that we have and the interesting that we have right now with Azerbaijan, that maybe Israel is going to put is threatening Iran, that they're going to put a military presence in Azerbaijan, which is adjacent to Iran. That's the interesting thing to see what a strong country we've become in front of the, in the eyes of those countries.
I agree, but let's go back to what we just discussed a second ago. Why is it that it's so important for all these members to stay in this government? Why not go to elections? So, simple reason is, if we went back to elections, we'd be exactly where we were 2 years ago. New polls show that most parties in this government drop. Yamina specifically drops down to somewhere between 4 to 5 mandates, depending on the poll. And as a result, there is no government to be formed. If we were to go to elections again today, neither party, there was no constellation in any form that would lead to a government. The right with Yamina would go get up to 60 because the New Hope Party would fall out and they would not pass the limit. All of these lead to the fact that every party in this government has a need, has a deep-seated need for this government to stay in power, at least until they can get their poll numbers up. Now, let's discuss why their poll numbers are down. Their poll numbers are down, honestly, because of COVID. There was a huge uptick in COVID. They also forced everyone to get a new vaccine and rolled out a new green permit, which was just an absolute failure. The new green permit was rolled out this Sunday, and it failed. Their website crashed immediately. No one was able to download the permit. The scanners were not working, and they were also forcing all of these stores to get scanners on short notice. And once again, they fell down the same trap the previous government had, and almost every government in the world did, which was, aside from the fact that they let cases go up again, they had terrible messaging. Everything they said was unclear on COVID. No one knew what was going to happen and when, and everything was done at the last minute. And this is, again, nothing to do with the policy-wise. This is just on messaging, which was one of their biggest critiques on the previous government. And they failed just as miserably as their predecessors. Now, all of that being said, there is something else that I would like to mention. They appear to be begging the result. What does that mean? The new policy is that we are now going to stricter permits, as in there's the new green permit. Anyone who doesn't have a third vaccine is gonna have, it can't go into stores, and we're requiring everyone to, not just to show it, but they have to use scanners and everything. And none of it matters, because statistically, from all the projections, the numbers are crashing, and they're going to continue crashing over the next few weeks. So now they get to claim, oh, we didn't do a lockdown, but we did implement a few new strategies, and because of that, everything crashed, and all of the numbers crashed. No, the numbers were crashing anyway, and they're just screwing with people's lives, instead and forcing them to do things just so that they could politically get to say that they caused the numbers to go down.
And for our next topic,
justice system. Okay, so a lot happened in the judicial system in the past week. There were 3 events. First, the list for the potential Supreme Court justices, there are 4 that need to be replaced this year, were uploaded. Now, just a quick reminder, the committee that appoints Supreme Court justices has 9 members. There is 2 members of the government, there are 2 members of Knesset, 3 judges, and 2 representatives of the Bar Association of Israel. Again, we are not going to go into the terrible system that elects Supreme Court justices. We did a full episode on this. You're welcome to go back and take a look. Now, let's go over which faction wants which judges. The right has supported 3 judges, Professor David Hahn, Professor Wingold, Professor Wyszynski, and Professor Kanfi Steins. Now, to be clear, I did all the work for you. I went through the resumes of these people, and a few of them are a little sad and have records that I would not want appointed to the Supreme Court, but a few of them are quite impressive. For example, Professor David Dunn, who is a professor in Universidad Ivrit Bishalayim and the Tel Aviv University. He has stated many times, and he's given many political opinions on a few issues. For example, he stated that the government should not be involved in the market unless there's been a collapse. And he said that any people who and many legal issues he has made his stances quite clear. He has very clear opinions on many matters. And the right can clearly assess any of the opinions he may take on the court, well, as best they can, with at least some integrity, that he will rule in a way that is in accordance with what the court should look like. He also has held positions in the past, not as a judge, but he has held important positions in the government. He was in charge of debt retrieval, and for the general debt retrieval, and he has authored many legal opinions on different matters, and his appointment would not be so terrible. Another of the right's suggestions is Dr. Chagai Wyszynski, who has written himself many books criticizing the Supreme Court on many of their actions, and he has read many legal papers on the status of Judea and Samaria and how law could be applied there. He's also a religious Jew who wrote an entire book on how Shemitah, Heter Mechira, could work legally and halachically. And his appointment would be a great addition to the court. The rest of the judges on this list, especially those wanted by the Bar Association and by the judges themselves, are terrible. And their precedent are terrible. They have, their record is just bad. On many different issues, their record has shown to be not reliable and to go with a lot more with what they feel or with the emotional or what they call the political ramifications instead of what the law states.
So one thing, the thing that bothers me, and this is true in general about the right, is a certain weakness when it comes to these situations, when it comes to the judges. See, I would want a very clear, I can imagine on the other, on the left, that if a right-wing judge goes up, it would be a public outcry. And a public, very clearly, no, I am, like, I am going to be biased. I want judges that are pro my opinions. And, like, I want, you know, for many things that you could say against, but when, you know, when Trump came and put up these conservative judges, and it was very clear. He wasn't hiding it. Like, very clear, I want judges that believe in my views. And in Israel, it's like you're scared to say it. Like, I want Gideon Saar and I want Yael Shaked to be straight up. Yes, I am publicly saying I want him and him. Why? Because they are more right-wing, because they are more more conservative, and those are the people that I want, and I'm not embarrassed to say it.
To be clear, the right in the States used to have the same issue. Aside from Reagan and maybe Trump, yes, Bush appointments and a few of the Reagan appointments even were bad. They had bad appointments. Both Bush's presidencies, the judicial appointments have come to bite them back in the ass. Why? Because they attempted to appease the left with their appointments. They didn't want to appoint anyone too controversial. That being said, no, the right in Israel and the right in the States, neither of them have stated that. And neither of them want to state that. Because I disagree with that statement. No, it's not because he will vote with my opinion. It's because he will read the law. Yes, he happens to be a right winger, and that's good. But he will read the law and he will rule by the letter of the law. He also, most importantly, has a true belief of what the court's position should be. The court is a separate branch that does not write laws. It is it adjudicates based on what the legislator wrote. And that is it. And that is the most important part of a Supreme Court justice's job. And that is what the right continues to forget. No, even if you want to appoint someone who is so partisan, no, the answer should not be whether or not you're a partisan, the answer should be whether or not you are a reliable justice. And only someone who has a record, someone who has held a position, or someone who has written extensively his own opinions that can be held against him, is someone that should be appointed. Never someone who has never faced a controversial case, because you must be able to judge them based on their actions and more than based on a feeling you have on the person or based on his religiousness, as we see with, for example, Mandelblit. Now, as to more things that happened in the judicial system this week. Two things. Number one, both of them have to do with the Minister of Justice, Gideon Saar. Gideon Saar has first agreed to a investigation committee of the government and of the Knesset into the Tzolilot. The Tzolilot is the submarines, which is under Netanyahu. The submarines were bought for a lot of money, and it may or may not have involved some corruption with his relatives. And as a result, there are many people who have wanted to investigate this for a long time. irrelevant to what our opinions may be on this matter. It is just a big political statement because it's something the left has wanted for a long time and the right has denied them. And him agreeing to this is one more step as, even if he truly believes it, it appears to be partisan and just attempt to stab his old boss in the back because he hates him. Now, the second law, the second thing is a law that was proposed by him that is finally brought down. This one is a very interesting one because it raises many issues. This one is a term limit. It is limiting the term of a prime minister to 8 years. Now, because many people got very annoyed at this, that this is going to be a personal law against Netanyahu, barring only him and only him running for prime minister, they're stating that no years will be counted from before the law is put in place. Meaning, it will be 8 years for anyone starting now. So Bennett could also serve 9 years if he wanted to, and Netanyahu could serve another 8 years. That being said, I am against this law. I support term limits in general. The issue is the parliamentary system is not designed for term limits. It's not. It's simply not. Our term limits are designed such as that our system must require a coalition to form. And that coalition forces people to essentially blackmail each other for political power and for policies. And if a prime minister is on the last leg of his term, or if he is past his 8 years, but they're allowing him to maintain, the exact language of the law has not been brought down yet, that's why I'm giving different options. If a prime minister is after his 8 years, meaning if this coalition falls apart, he's done politically forever, then he'll give anything just to stay in power. It leads to automatic corruption. Yes, power ultimately corrupts, but a power vacuum causes bad things to fill it always. And I'm not saying that term limits shouldn't exist. I'm saying that you can't just apply a patch to a broken dam. You must fix the system and not just attempt to fix a symptom of the system.
So I slightly disagree with you. Obviously, I think the whole system should be fixed. We've discussed this. The whole system should be changed. But I don't agree that it's not a step towards the right direction. Okay? I obviously think that this is something that should not be done retroactively, and that solves our issues. I think that it should be done ahead of time. I do not mind the fact that it changes. And also, every system has an issue with the last time that a person's in power. And you figure out how to limit the power, but also not limit it too much, in which case, if someone doesn't have power in the last year of his service, you could figure that out into the details. But in general, the concept that a new prime minister that comes in, and yes, it's restarted. Let's say Naftali Bennett ends up continuing to be prime minister for the next years. Okay, so he'll be able to be for 9 years instead of 8 years. Okay, that's not a critical situation. But the idea that a prime minister understands, and other way around, because I think it's not all just about power, okay? It's especially in our system where the prime minister doesn't have the ultimate power. What can he do? He can fire or not fire his ministers of his government.
Not really either, but yeah.
No, you know, he can. He can still fire the ministers, you might think about the government. But what I'm saying is that in the end, it's a point where you actually should prepare. One of my issues that I had with Bibi was not just about, like, it was the idea that you should be preparing to make the country better. His concept was, I am the only one that can do this. And you know what? There were many years that I agreed that in the current political situation, because he's been in for so many years, he's really the only one that could hold the country afloat. But I think that comes from the fact that he was there for so many years. But if a person knew in advance, you know what, he was a great prime minister, but at year six, towards year seven, he knows, I gotta start preparing for when I leave. I know I'm leaving. I'm done in a year and a half from now. Then why don't I start preparing and trying to bring up someone? Now, that doesn't mean that a person will be chosen. He might bring up his predecessor and you know, try to bring him to be successful and politically and whatever it was, and they might vote someone else in. But he already knows he's preparing the political system with his meetings with other people, and people meet with him politically, that, yeah, I'll be done in a year from now. And it's okay because someone else will take over. I think that's what makes America strong. I think it would make us stronger as well.
But it did cause many issues in America that are already prevalent today in Israel that might be maximized. For example, the administrative state was caused partially by the fact that a president had to leave after 8 years, meaning that the president was replaced consistently, but the secretary who sits in the president's office, or the secretary who sits in the treasury, not the secretary of the treasury, but a person who sits there, who has more power than the president because he's staying there forever. He's not being replaced. And that might be maximized in this scenario if I know that in your last year and a half, I'm going to do whatever I want. Because I know, oh, you, Mr. Prime Minister, you're leaving soon. You don't have any power here anymore.
Okay, so now you're touching on an inherent issue that we have in the country, and I agree with that, but I think the solution is very simple. I think there's no term continuance between governments. The second there's a new government, every single person that works for the government is fired immediately. Now, he can be hired back 10 minutes later, but he is fired. Your term ended, just like anyone else if you work for a government official. If you worked, if you were the speaker of a certain government official and he is not chosen, of course you're fired, you're done. That's okay. And if he continues on, then you're rehired again the next day. And that's where I think it should be, is that the people who stay in their jobs, and the fear that we have in this country is that, and this connects to our episode, which you should listen to, about the unions, is that we're always protecting the worker. I'm sorry, if you chose, not chose, but if you ended up working for the government, that you know that it's a good job, it's an interesting job, it might pay well, but you know it's a job that is unsafe, and you get certain bonuses for that. Unless you're very good, you might get a higher salary, but you know that when you go in. And yes, I think that if the government flips tomorrow, you might be out of your job. That's your decision to go work for the government. And if you are very good, they might decide to hire you again. And that, I think, would solve many other issues that we have in the country as well.
I agree with that. But we'll discuss this again when the exact language of the law is laid out before the Knesset to take a vote. And we'll also discuss then how we see the different factions of this Knesset voting for it.
And with that, we'd like to conclude this week's episode. We thank you for listening. We hope you enjoyed. We'll see you next week. We have very interesting interviews coming in the next couple weeks. Thank you for listening. We remind you that you can email us at hwga.pod@gmail.com. This is Here We Go Again.